Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Ray, I have heard people say in the radio and television business when electronics and technology goes well, it goes very, very well. And when it doesn't, so we had some technical difficulties on our first show of 2021, but we're on. So your first few sentences, commenting, opening were lost, but we have the gist of our show. So Happy New Year to you, sir, and we will move forward.
All right. So once again, I'll say welcome to CAGDU about your dog and you, Capital Area Guide Dog Users. And it is an organization that reps over 100 guide dog users through in Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, Northern Virginia, Montgomery County, Baltimore, and also in Southern Maryland. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we still are honoring our fallen comrade, Mr. Charlie Crawford, who passed last year on September 9, 2020, and we're interviewing people that we hope to have a co-host to sit in Mr. Charlie's seat. We can't say replace Mr. Charlie because nobody can replace Charlie Crawford. So we still have the black cover over his microphone. And again, the show is to talk about a blind person who have service dogs, that how they came about receiving the dog, why they decided to get a guide dog, how that guide dog helped them throughout their daily performances, and in terms of their independence and their professional life, a public life, and their private life. And we're going to review our past year, so I'm going to introduce, as usual, our hostess with the mostest, our engineer, and our announcer, Miss Renee. How are you doing today again, Miss Renee? And Miss Renee, we would be remiss. Unfortunately, we are still in the media, and we would be remiss, especially we live here in the D.C. metropolitan area, to give our comments and observation on the atrocious, and I don't even know if there's enough words to describe the attack of our democracy January the 6th around 1 p.m. In the afternoon East Coast time, and that's a Wednesday 2021. That's going to be a date as they say, infamy. So that's why I give you the time, give you the date, and this happened in Washington, D.C., at our nation's capital, as our president-elect, Mr. Joe Biden, referred to it as the Citadel of I can't think of another term, but it is the central place for the nation's capital. So, Ms. Renee, you know, some you give me your observation of, I gave the place and location, and just give us a narrative of what happened, because, like I say, we're still in the media, and this is just a day in history that we are obligated to touch upon. So give me your narration of what happened.
Well, you know, we do try to remain apolitical because we approach all of our congresspeople, our senators, our local officials to be advocates or allow us to be advocates on issues that are important to us. So it was very disturbing to see that happen. And we're not talking about one political party versus the other. What we're talking about is something that you would see in a country that perhaps did not practice democracy. I mean, we've always been a shining light to the world that, you know, this thing that we call democracy, this test of democracy and whether or not it can survive, was assaulted day before yesterday, and it was jarring to anybody that saw it. It's just like, this is not my America, you know, what happened. So staying apolitical, I'm not going to take any sides. We're just saying the assault on people, the loss of life. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that we should be able to protest. I mean, we are guaranteed that through the Bill of Rights and our amendment, the Bill of Rights. But the thing of it is, we are not encouraged. We're not allowed to turn this into a situation that we saw unfold day before yesterday. Just not done in this country. We don't do that. We have an orderly transfer of power, and that's always been our saving grace. We've always been very proud of that. But unfortunately now we've got to go back to square one and see how have we so divided our country? You know, persons with disabilities have tried for a very long time to be considered part of the mainstream. They have advocacy groups. They have groups for self-determining their own future and their own path. And so regardless of political affiliation, they have worked together with other groups and coalitions to be considered a part of the tapestry of America. And yesterday, or day before yesterday now, this is Friday, so that was Wednesday, we saw it fraying at the edges. So it's very disconcerting, very, very disconcerting. So I pray that we can move on and talk about the things that are germane to the blind community and to the guide dog user community, inclusive of that, and see if we can't be more civil and cordial to each other. It leaves you beyond words. There are no words to describe the sense of loss. You know, I'm old enough to remember the protests of Vietnam and the civil rights protests. And because we live in the nation's capital, we see a lot of protests, the women's protests, the Million Man March protests. We've seen a lot of them. We have never, ever, Black Lives Matter, we have never seen what occurred in our nation's capital. So it is sobering, and we have to pick up the pieces, and we have to move forward. And it's forward together. So we're going to have to build new coalitions. We're going to have to be respectful of other people's opinions, and we can't practice cancel culture. Cancel culture means because I don't agree with you politically, I can't respect you as a human being. And I think that's where we make our mistake. The cancel culture does not mean that we have to agree to disagree peaceably. So I know that was a long monologue, and you may not have expected that, but I'm so full emotionally. And for people of faith, and I'm a woman of faith, it is an opportunity for the church to become the church in biblical times and to work with other groups. It doesn't mean that because we believe differently, we can't work together. So it's just been sobering, Reverend. It's just been sobering and disappointing and trying to figure out with the rest of United States citizens how we move forward.
Okay, and I'm going to make disclaimer because we are not news reporters on this, and we mentally sort of gave you a commentary, but we didn't give you an oil description of what happened. So we're just going to refer you to because we don't want to take a point of view in audio describing what happened. So we would just give you some homework, refer you to go on online, whatever engine you use, and just put in the insurgent or attack on the Capitol in Washington, D.C., Wednesday, January the 6th, 2021. And you will get, because people are going to say, well, what are y'all talking about, what you just heard, the opinion that you just heard from our host with the Moses, because we didn't describe it, and we don't want to describe it because we don't want to sway you one way or the other. So we'll just give you homework to go on, like I said, the Internet or YouTube, and you can pull that information up and see what happens for yourself. So saying that,
let me just jump in here for a moment, because oftentimes in the blind community there are terms that are used that sighted community may not understand. And when you say audio description, either describe that for our listeners or I can describe it for the listeners.
Audio description is the media that's that visual, movies, anything visual in terms of media is described by a voiceover for a blind or visually impaired person to know what's going on. And I say we didn't want to audio describe here because we are not looking at, and Ms. Renee is the one with the sight, not looking directly at the incident as it happened. When you hear that music, as Reverend Ray always says, it's time to go in his pocket to pay some bills. And you're listening to CAG do about your dog and you, and we will continue on the other side of the bump out and bump in and talking about our wrap up show for the past year.
You are listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
All right, welcome back to a CAGDU about your dog and you. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we just doing a wrap up show on some of the topics that we talked about in year 2020 and looking forward to year 2021. Also, I want to give a shout out to the Elvis Presley fans. Because I always bring it up, and people say, well, why is that important? Are you related to him? the day is Elvis Presley's birthday, January the 8th. And I'm just about birthdays. And so I just want to mention that in tongue in cheek. And they have radio shows, and they have shows and stuff that talk about famous and popular and important people. Birthdays. And I always think of Elvis Presley's birthday, January the 8th, that we're doing this show. So, Ms. Lane, give us our lineup for today.
Well, this is the year in review, and that's what we're calling it. And we our inaugural show was the 10th of April, so we're not quite a year old on the radio. And so we just wanted to look back on the ground that we covered. We all know that the number one story this year, of course, was COVID. But when we started, I don't think COVID was a thing at that time. So we had guests, and here again, the beauty of technology is that we've been able to have our guests on, and we are socially distanced and safe because they're in their homes or their offices. And so we don't have any chance of becoming a spreader kind of event. So let me just go back to the 10th of April was our first show. And because this is CAGDU, Capital Area Dog Guide Users, we started with the oldest dog guide school in the United States, which is, and since you're a trivia butt and you know what day Elvis Presley was born, I'm sure you know the oldest guide dog school in the United States is?
Seeing that guide dog school started in January the 29th, 1929 in New Jersey.
And Reverend Ray was a mere lad of, no, never mind. Okay, that's a little joke. And we had the Seeing Eye president, Glenn Hoagland, on. And he talked about his new approach to guiding Seeing Eye was going to be listen and learn. Now, there had been a couple of blind executive directors, and so now they have gone back to I don't want to say he doesn't have vision. He is a seeing executive director. And so, again, one of the big things in the blind community is not being told what to do, but guiding sighted assistants in how to aid them. And we also had an advocacy specialist on, and she talked about legislation that protects guide dog users. So can you talk a little bit about what that means, that legislation, Reverend?
Yeah, and let me just two things correct you a little bit. One, there's only ever been one blind director of CNI, and which was Mr. Jim Cush, who has recently retired, and the new the director, which is Mr. Glenn.
Glenn.
He's only been on the job since October. Just 6 months start interviewing him, and we was 1 month into COVID. COVID really be sort of became official that Friday, March the 31st. I mean, 13th. I'm sorry. So So we was into COVID by then, but the advocate specialist that was on, she was blind. And had a guide dog. And the advocacy is that two main things that all guide dog schools and handlers and people that support guide dogs that try to advocate for is one, to have guide dogs accepted in all aspects of life, and that's government, private, to be able to use the services, to be able to go into a restaurant, to be able to go into a government building, to be able to live in a housing complex, to be accepted. And the other part of that is policy and laws to protect the guide dog and the guide dog users. And that can be a law like New Jersey recently that has now called the Dusty Law, the Dusty Law, where a guide dog was being trained at 9 months old, and another private owner's dog attacked the dog and injured it to the point that the dog was never able to be used as a guide service dog. And when you invest the kind of money and time that a guide dog school put into raising and training and socializing the dog, you're talking about close to $100,000. So when a dog like that attack and you no longer can use it, not only the financial implication, but also the psychological on not being able to use the dog, the psychological on a guide dog handler, a person getting attacked. So, and that happens, believe it or not. For statistics, there are 40% of guide dog users have been attacked in one way or another. And all states do not have guide dog protection laws. So that's one of the things that we're working on. As I say, the main two things is to protect the guide dog and the guide dog user, and two is to be able to have rights and accessibility to use services, products, and being able to live where in the United States, although throughout the world, other guide dog schools. But those are two main things for advocating for guide dogs.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you corrected me on those points. Now, do you have any idea what the effects of COVID has had on the dogs, because they breed them there and then they give them to families, et cetera? We were only into COVID a little while, and we thought it was going to last a month or two. Do you remember what they said about how they were handling that?
Yeah, most of the dogs, and there's about 15 schools that's trained dogs and that train guide dogs in the United States, and most of the schools that has a brick and mortar where you go as a resident to stay at school to get trained anywhere from 3 months, anywhere from 3 weeks to a month. And that's our time. I'll come back on the other side to explain to you how all that worked and how COVID affected that. So this is CAGDU, about your dog and you, and we'll be back on the other side of the break.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C., they carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, more than likely, they have it. They have a store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. 202-747-3434. And you are listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. Back over to you, Rev.
Yes, and so as I was saying, that COVID affected it where the point that they had to shut the schools down, and like I said, most people thought this was going to last maybe no longer than maybe a month, maybe a couple of months. No one thought it would go this long, so the schools had to shut down. In the last few months. Last, I think, 3 months, they have opened back up. But, of course, like anything else, most of the schools used to train anywhere from 6 or 7 persons in a group to around 18 to 22 people. So they have all cut their classes down, significantly have cut their classes down. And they're training anywhere from six, you know, persons in terms of six persons in terms of training them and but then they still have the same amount of instructors, so a number of students are getting one-on-one training.
Wow, that's really good.
That makes it.
Well, listen,
yeah,
Rev, I need to move us a little bit faster because we're on the first, our first radio show, which was in April, and we've got to get through the rest of the year. So we're going to move a little bit along expeditiously. 17 April, we had a show we called Turning the Tables. And there's a Chinese proverb that says a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. And so we turned the tables on our co-host, Charles Charlie Crawford, the late Charles Charlie Crawford, and Reverend Ray. And Reverend Ray, like you like to say all the time, you can look up information on Google. But what we wanted to do is to make that personal. And so we talked about where you and Charlie grew up. We talked about when you lost your sight. We talked about when you got a guide dog and what that meant to you. We also talked about school and work careers. And so what was it that you learned about, because you knew Charlie for a long time, that in that interview you learned about him that you didn't know before?
Well, one thing I didn't know I had grown up in Puerto Rico. I did not know he had a twin brother that was not blind, but he was. And so you just never know. And also about some of his work history and that he have had nine dogs. But just some of the accomplishments that he had, was the first in Massachusetts where he grew up, as a professional career, and started a commission for was the first commission for the blind in Boston. And so so you know you learn things about people you thought you knew until you get into
exactly.
a setting like this, you know.
Yeah.
But we're
exactly.
gonna miss Charlie though. We're gonna miss
yes,
him.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So that takes us up to May, and that was Patrick Sheehan, and he is an advocate for transportation for the blind, and he's a volunteer at the American Council of the Blind. And he, I remember him describing it as the ACB, American Council, as a way to level the playing field. But let me ask you, why is transportation so important for the blind community?
Well, because if you cannot get around, then you cannot access, first of all, going to work, getting a job, because you have to be able to get to your job and from your job. And transportation is just a broad word for us. But what that also means is learning how to use a cane to travel, to get to the bus, to get on the bus, to get to the cab, or get to a metro access station, and then using the dog. You know, people say that dog
mm-hmm.
gets you there faster. But transportation for blind people is we can't drive cars, so we can't go out and get a car. It's not easy for us just to go out in the street and stand and walk. And so transportation is just a broad term that means the independence and being trained to be able to go to work, be able to go to the grocery store. Although now
mm-hmm.
just about every entity have a service that would deliver to you, so you could almost
exactly.
at all.
Well, you know, on that same show, Rev, we had Becky Davidson from Guiding Eyes. It's another guide dog schools. Am I correct? There are 11 accredited guide dog schools in the United States.
About that, yes.
Yes, okay. And one of the things I want to talk about is accredited guide dog schools. Why has that been training of guide dogs so important in this day and time with the introduction of support animals? Why is a trained guide dog so important?
And the reason that is because a while back, years ago, the government dropped some of the regulations on what's a trained animal, that you had to put them through a certified training, a recognized curriculum, and they sort of loosened that up so people, individuals, started training, which they are not trained, or professionals start training different animals, and that's where you hear about the pigs, and you hear about the peacock, and you hear about the snake and all, and taking them on public transportation. And because seeing that guide dogs was so well trained over the years, and the work they did with the public to get to introduce them to the public, where the public is so high, well trained. A trained dog was a people, the organization, different entities, businesses, and all just started accepting other service animals, thinking they was trained as well. Well, they found out they wasn't trained, and now a lot of resistance, especially airports and airplane flights, animals not conducting themselves accordingly. So a lot of the hard work that the guide dog schools did to introduce guide dogs and had them accepted into society really was eroded. But in the last year, airports and other establishments had put some regulations in place to say, yes, you can still bring your service animal, but they have to show that they have been properly trained and be in. There was a lot of fighting with the blind groups and the guide dogs with the airports and all, and say, hey, you know, these dogs are trained. So they changed the transportation law to exclude a guide dog that's been trained, so they don't have to go through all the paperwork and prove all of it. So, yeah, so they're very important.
Well, we want to encourage our listeners to go back to our website and listen to a past show that they can learn more about what Becky Davidson shared. And one of the things we don't have time to go into, but Guiding Eyes also trains marathon dogs. They are trained to run with their handlers. So, again, that show is 1st of May 2020, and you can hear that on our website, CAGDU2020@gmail.com. Well, the 22nd of May, we had Eric Bridges, the executive director of ACB, the American Council of the Blind. And the question I want to ask you about his visit, Reverend, is why is the pronoun of versus for so important? American Council of the Blind instead of the American Council for the Blind.
Let's give that website again. It's cagdu.org, and the email, if you want to email, is so we sort of smash that together. So it's cagdu.org for the website. Okay, but no problem.
Thank you, Reverend. Okay.
But let me go to why they say of the blind and National Federation of the Blind, NFB, that's American Council of the Blind, because of means that blind persons are the decision makers. They are on the board of directors. They are making decisions, as they always say, ask us if it's about us. So when you say for, you got organizations that being philanthropic or mean to service or help. And those persons are not blind. So they don't, and not saying that they hard not in the right place, but they don't know what it is for a blind person to have to get up and just go to the front door to get up and go downstairs and go outside and go to the mailbox or something. And so blind people need to be part of making decisions for themselves. And in the organizations that say of the blind, when you see that OF, you know that the decision the decisions that's being made is by blind people. Okay.
Right, right. Okay, that moves us right up to June, 6 months into the year 2020, and Cecilia Warren, the Policy Director of Emergency Management, talked to us about from policy to implementation and how to be prepared and what we need to know to be prepared. Why is it special for blind people to be have emergency preparedness training over and above what the typical population has?
Well, because here again, and I want to say, and my hat is off to Governor Hogan of Maryland State, because he hired her in one of the higher positions. She is blind and have a guide dog to work in the disability services for the persons of Maryland, and understanding that if there's a fire, if there's a disaster, well, a blind person cannot see on their TV, and especially not at this point, because every network do not have audio description. So if there's something flashed up there and say, hey, there's an emergency, there's a tornado coming your way, or or something like that, where as a blind person, you don't know that. Or if you're a person in a wheelchair and you live on the 18th floor and there's an emergency, where you know one of the first things they do is stop the elevators. Okay, so how does that person, or how do even the rescue people know that person on the 18th floor? So therefore, right. Policy has to be put in where you at the table and there's training to say, okay, there's a system set up that if there's an emergency, then something comes up on a console or is in your file to say that at this address, a person in a wheelchair lives on the 18th floor and you need to help them to get out of the window here or on the north side of the building or whatever, and if it's a blind person, then, you know, you need to notify them. You can't just flash something up on the television.
The screen,
the
right.
The screen. And the same thing, if you out in the community, where most people would know where to run to, if you could see to a certain location or whatever. But if you're a blind person, you wouldn't know that unless you have an intervention in terms of calling somebody and say, hey, you know, I live here. What do I do in case of emergency? And then they can come and work that out and let people in your building know you might live alone, where there might be a designated person that come down and check on you. So, you know, all that have to be worked out. It just don't happen. So, fortunately, we have policies and regulations and stuff. Now, that's the music again, and y'all know what that means. Jingle, 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 some crunch, money that we have to pay out. So this is Tag You About Your Dog and You, and I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we will bump out, and we will bump back in. Miss Renee.
You are listening to Tag You About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital. Back to Reverend Ray and our year in review. I think we're up to the 26th of June, where we had Claire Stanley. He was an advocacy and outreach specialist for ACB. And so that we've covered a little bit already about advocacy and specialists, so we know pretty much what they do. That takes us to the 10th of July. And Sarah Calhoun, who is the newly elected president of GDUI, that's Guide Dog Users International. And Guide Dog Users International is a special interest affiliate of ACV. So, Rev, why does ACB feel it so important to have a special affiliate that addresses the use and the needs and the challenges faced by guide dog users?
Well, because like, for instance, CAGDU, a guy about your dog and you that sponsored this radio show, and I'm the president of the Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc., which include several jurisdictions here. And the thing is, when you belong to a national organization and you have problems across the country that similar groups are having the same problems, they have a national organization that go to the Capitol to advocate for resolutions, then you don't need to have just Maryland and Prince George County. In Maryland, they have their problems, and they run it down there. And then in California, you have people with a guide dog, they're going to run it down there. So if we can have an organization where like-minded groups come together and we be on one accord about two or three resolutions on guide dog protection, guide dog accessibility, then we can get together, which we do once a year. We have the different guide dog groups from the national come to representatives come to Washington, D.C. once a year on some agreed regulations to canvas and meet with their representatives in both houses to share what their concerns are, to get it on that their agenda to pass laws and policies that protect and give accessibility to guide dogs and the users. So that's why it's important to belong to and have a national group.
Good, good, good. On 24th of July, we talked to Tony Stevens. He's the Director of Development of ACB. And development is so important because all organizations need money, and so many organizations do worthy work. So we learned a lot from Tony Stevens, and then we went over to the 14th of August, Deb Lewis, a woman of many hats. She was the vice president of GDUI, Guide Dog Users International. She is an alum of the Guide Dog Users International board member, and she also hosts a radio show, ACB, American Council of the Blind radio show. So ACB has an entire radio station. And why is the radio so important to the blind community?
Well, let me answer that this way, but let me first say that Tony Stevens, as well as Deb, both are blind and guide dog users. Radio is so important to blind people because of audio description that we can hear on the radio, and the radio is mostly about voicing, and also to get our message out. And I say our because I'm blind, I'm included, but to be able to get your message out in terms of what blindness is about, what blindness can do, give us the opportunity to have shows like a cooking show with a blind person. They say, what? A blind person can cook? And so to be able to have a cooking show that blind people do, to have talk about the use of accessible technology. So we have they have shows on there to talk about how to use a computer, how to use a screen reader. And unfortunately, you're not going to get that on just the average network radio. They're not going to spend that kind of time, 2 and 3 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, to talk about technology for blind people, blind people, like you said, about the emergency rescue. They're not going to spend an hour or 2 hours talking about how that's helpful for a blind person. So ACB, American Council of the Blind, understood that they have to be able to present that and make aware of what the capability of blind persons can do, as well as services and products that's out here and coming out here that they have some influence on to be able to serve the blind community.
Okay, good enough. That takes us up to the 11th of September. Many of us remember 9/11 as often how it's referred, but now we at your CAGDU, Capital Area Guide Dog Users, have a particularly poignant reason to remember. It was the day that we learned that our co-host, Charlie Crawford, had passed. And Reverend Ray, just briefly, can you tell us what Charlie's presence meant to you in the other hosting chair?
Well, I could say Charlie, that's been an activist for years and known all over the country, some places all over the world, and he could open doors up any place. People can't say no to Charlie with the professional career he has had in working in all type of blind organizations and at the top levels in a number of organizations. So to me, just the knowledge he had about blindness, policy, he was really heavy into policy in terms of advocacy for blind, for guide dogs to be able to go into businesses and all, and housing, and just where you can use a guide dog, and then the protection of guide dogs. And we were together and still am working on a Maryland protection guide dog bill to be passed mm-hmm. into law to protect guide dogs and their users in Maryland. So he just a very strong advocate that he has been, yes.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you pointed out something, and I wanted to, and I'm glad that you made that clarification. September 25th, we had a guest on named Jerome Parsons. And Jerome got his dog a little bit later in life, and something interesting, every story has something interesting about it. Once Jerome was identified that he would be losing his sight, he went to Seeing Eye Guide Dog up in New Jersey and talked to them, got a sense of what having a dog was going to be like, came back home, continued to live his life and be active. He was in the State Department, I believe. And once he lost his sight, he then went up to Seeing Eye to get a guide dog. So had you ever heard of another story where a person, while they still had sight, went up to check out guide dog schools?
No, and here again, I've known Jerome for years, and I never knew that story about him, and I commend him on that because most people that's losing their vision, they have to go through a grieving period that they don't need to want to accept that. And the fact that he, on some level, accepted he was going to lose it, that he did a preemptive attack, and went up to the school to check out what it was about. So I was very impressed with that. So like I say, most people losing their sight, one of the hardest things to get through that first phase of grieving and accepting, and not because most blind people, I would say 95 or 98% of people losing their sight are in denial for a long time. Some people never accept the fact. And so they don't even go get the skills. And like I told you, the first thing we talked about, transportation, so he realized he's going to need to be able to get around.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I want to jump in here because one of the things that you point out, we have a format when we interview people. And one of the part of the format is we talk about when they lost their sight. Some of them lost it at birth. Some of them lost it as children. Some of them lost it as adults. And the reason we talk about that and what conversations they had with themselves to keep themselves going, what kept you going, what was your family's reaction to your losing your sight, those are all things that go beyond a Google search. Those are the human sides, and that's why the story with Jerome Parsons was so enlightening to me because we had never heard anybody say that. And as long as we have been doing this, you know, each story is so unique and so different, which takes us to 9 October. Our guest was John Pack, and he works at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. And when we think of NASA, we think about the the scientists there that explore the Earth and the solar system and the universe, we never realize that there is a blind person in a computer room somewhere helping to keep them in their cohort doing their work. And John was an interesting guest. Well, all of our guests are interesting, but he was interesting to talk about his role at NASA. Because we ever think about blind people having significant employment opportunities. How does the blind community see someone, how do they see employment or full employment for the blind community?
Well, unfortunately, across the board of over 65 million persons with disability, and I think like 20-some is blind, those able to be employed only no more than 10% or less are employed. So to have a job at NASA at that level, that is very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And very impressive. And
mm-hmm.
then, unfortunately, of the people that are employed, less than 4% make more than $4,000 a year, believe in that. There's a lot of people employed
wow.
that's blind. They don't make much money. And
yeah.
I know he must make him pretty good money, so very impressive. But also the other thing with John Pax, he say I'm a Asian guy that sound like a white man, and there's very few Asian persons in a blind, let alone have a guide dog. And I think of the I've been getting guide dogs since June of 71, and you know and I think he's the third Asian person that I have met that have had a guide dog, and he's the youngest Asian. He was in my class when I got my last dog here, Raven, in September 2019, and so it was very interesting to hear how he came about getting dog, because we all know, you know, we all talk about the jokes of, you know, Asian people and when it comes to dogs and cats and restaurants and all of that. And so so it was really interesting in how his culture see a guide dog or just a dog and then a guide dog. So he, I take my hat off to him because he's constantly every day in his culture, explaining about a dog in some parts of his culture and family, just they, you know, traditionally and culturally and historically, they still can't get past a dog coming in your house and sitting down.
That applies to other cultures and nationalities
yes.
too. Because I mean, you worked for a while at CNI. Specifically to talk to black communities about acceptance
yes.
of guide dogs. Like you said, they're used to having a dog outside in the yard or on the back porch, but to come in the house, lie down, and become a part of who you are, there is a
culture shock.
Period. It is culture shock and a period of adjustment to do that.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us right into October 23rd. Ron Brown, the road warrior, cane travel teacher extraordinaire, was here to help us settle the argument, can dogs and canes coexist? We are a show about guide dogs, and as I said, he is a cane travel teacher. And we were also celebrating White Cane Awareness Day, which would have been the 15th of October. And that show title was Unleash the Cane. And Reverend Ray, do you think we settled that argument?
I think we settled that argument in this, Ms. Renee. You need, if you want to get a guide dog, it's a wonderful thing, but you need to have your cane. Because a guide dog is still an animal, and it can get hurt, it can get sick. You know, things can happen, and what do? You still have to, if you got a job like we talked about John Pax, that's that important, and that high paying price You can't call in and say, hey, my dog's sick, I can't come to work. No, it don't work like that. Or, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, unfortunately, you know, like I'm on my seventh dog. I mean, I had to get the seventh. So what happened when I lost the first, the second, the third? I mean, did my life stop? No. So unfortunately, I was one of the persons that thought once I got a guide dog, I didn't use my cane anymore. And I lost my dog, and I realized how non-independent I was. I lost my travel skills. I mean, like anything else, you have to keep up your skills when it comes to using a cane, because it is a skill, and it's something you have to use. So I had to come to the understanding that, yes, and so that's why the show was so important, because a number of people, you know, when they got a guide dog, they would just throw their cane away. But you need to have both, man. You could prefer a dog, but, you know, depends on your lifestyle, depends on how you need to get around, depends on where you live at. You know, you can live in a rural area where there's not much transportation in terms of getting on a bus and go from one point to the other, or sidewalks where they're just dirt roads, but the dogs can be trained, and they are trained to what they call work in the country, roads and stuff. But so it depends on, you know, you, but I don't care who you are, if you use a dog, you still need to have good travel skills with a cane.
Okay. Well, we're rounding up to the 13th of November, and our guest was Gary LaGates. He's a retired French and Latin teacher, and he talked about how you manage a guide dog if you are also hard of hearing. You know, as the blind community ages, many of them have multiple disabilities that they're dealing with. How does the blind community make room for a person who is, say, hard of hearing in addition to being blind?
Well, here again, circling back to the American Council of the Blind, National Federation of the Blind, belonging to national organizations, they do have, in within those groups, other committees, divisions like the blind and deaf. And here again, I went to Maryland School with Gary LaGates. I met him in 1967, something like that. Now, all this time, I did not know he had a hearing problems. And he said he got his professional career, I think, when he started teaching. Something happened, and he started having hearing problems. But I did not realize that. And using in the school he went to, which is CNI that I went to in New Jersey, the first oldest school with Star Dog, they do not specialize in training deaf and blind persons, even though he has some hearing. So they do have other schools that's one of their specialties that they offer. Training persons with deaf and hard of hearing. But for
wow.
some reason, you know, he had friends that went to CNI, the couple of schools that he applied for. CNI was the first school that accepted his application, so he just went on there. So, but there are schools he could have waited, you know, and chosen to go to a school that would accept him that had that train guide dogs for deaf and a blind person, because the guide dog that's trained for blind people, where they have certain skills, but with a deaf person, that guide dog also might be trained to, when you hear the telephone ring, the mm-hmm. dog will, you know, will alert you that someone knock on your door, or doorbell ring. The dog that's been trained for a deaf person will have a different reaction, whereas a dog that's been strictly trained for just a blind person with decent hearing, they might not have gotten that training.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it is a difference. It is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, and we reiterate this often, is that we take the time with our guests to not just come on and talk about their specialty or about their relationship to their dog, but we want a picture of the whole person. And, you know, we're taught, because we want to be polite, we don't ask people certain questions. And sitting behind a microphone on a radio, it gives you permission to ask a lot of things that you might not ask at a cocktail party or a picnic or something.
And special, Reverend Ray.
Well, yeah, Reverend Ray, you are an exception. You will ask anybody anything, and you have left people mortified at the table. But that's another show. Well, we're coming to the end of year, and 27 November, we took a little bit of host privilege, and we had a show about gratitude. Rev, why did you think a show about gratitude in November was important?
Well, given a couple of things. One, Ms. Renee, because of COVID pulled the cover off of a lot of inconsistencies, people that's left out of the so-called American way, apple pie and Chevrolet and all of that. Just the insecurities of food that people with disabilities don't have. And what is a Saint Teresa said, the greatest illness in the world is being isolated. And come to find out, you know, not being able to get out with COVID and all, a lot of people with disability did not have PCA, personal care attendants, that wanted to come to their home to do the tasks they usually do for them, clean up, cook and all that, because they didn't want to catch COVID. A lot of family members didn't want to go to family, and a lot of family members that wanted to go to families, like grandmoms and elder adults and stuff, could not go to. So to see how where one is at, and I was fortunate to have you know, a loving wife and family and a job, and a lot of people lost their jobs to COVID, and even to today, we still got 20 million or more people that's not working. A lot of people never going to be able to have the kind of job or income that they had at one time, especially in the service community. Hotels are never going to be that far, we know, in a while, that have, you know, thousands of people or stadiums and all. So I just thought wherever we were at the time this year, we need to reflect on how grateful we are, you know, the gratitude,
mm-hmm.
how grateful we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make it an annual thing with Razor Sewell Robinson family of gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rev, we're coming to the end of our show, and we only have one more month to do, and that was 11 December, and we had Jack Turner on. And we had Jack to talk about when your guide dog dies. Now, you talked a little bit about what happened when you lost your guide dog. So what is the feeling of having lost a guide dog?
Well, you know, here again, it's the individual, because like Jack Turner, which I went to school with in Merrill School for the Blind in the 60s, and I would never think he would be a person that, you know, would take care of a guide dog or a dog or whatever. But, and he said he got his dog after he lost his sight in 2011. Then he got a guide dog in 2012 and became very attached to it. And he was very successful as a blind vendor in Delaware. And he had no problem in treating his dog like his own child and special.
Right.
I mean, money was no object when it came to his dog. Ate the best, had the best medical care and all. And so to hear him in the loss of a dog just, you know, reminded me, like I said, I'm on my seventh dog. And I know CNI and other guide dog schools, when you get your first dog, they try to cushion in some language in a way, not to tell you not to love your dog and all, but understand, you know, that this is not going to be your first dog, and you need to have a good relationship with the dog, but also, and for some people like you, Miss Renee, I don't think you could get a guide dog and be with it for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and then the dog die, and you just move on to another dog. There's just certain personalities that's just not going to happen. With now, fortunately for my personality, I was able to do that. But there's a lot of reasons when people say, why you don't get a dog? It's mobility, it's attitude, it's physical, it's economics, it's emotion, it's psychological. And so when you take all that into account, of all blind people that could get a dog, probably only 3% are able to really, with all those things taken into consideration, get a dog. So that's why when you see a blind person and you say, why don't you get a dog? No, it's a lot more to it than that.
Well, Reverend Ray, we've got to close out. You've got about 60 seconds. You want to set our listeners up for what they can expect this year, 2021?
Well, this year, 2021, is going to be a lot more of what 2020 was in terms of special guests, in terms of getting to know the human being, the human aspect of it, and having a relationship with a service animal that can not just give you dignity, but can give you the type of cross-the-board experience, special lifestyle. So we just look forward to 2021, and we're not going to say, and we're just going to say the best for everyone, because even out of 2020, there's some good things came out of it, and we don't have the time to enumerate on it now. So, Ms. Renee, I say to you, happy 2021, and we look forward to our upcoming special guest.
All right, Rev. Well, you have been listening to CADDU, About Your Dog and You. That's Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is caddu2020@gmail.com. That's C-A-G-D-U 2020@gmail.com. You can go to our website, cagdu.org, and listen to our past shows. You can also call us at 301-263-7371. 301-263-7371. Tune in next week for our guest, and you'll learn more about Capital Area Guide about Capital Area Guide Dog Users and how that can affect you.